I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 501. Don't judge a movie by its trailer. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
The heat wave's over, so I'm not melting anymore.
Right? Bye-bye, humidity.
Bye, Felicia. Bye. Get out of here.
You went with the bye, Felicia, and I went with the NSYNC.
Wow.
We totally flopped each other there.
Yeah, because I, don't get me wrong, totally thought about going NSYNC, but I'm like, nah, let me up my game a little bit.
I appreciate that. See, I was like, I'm going to go with the nostalgia for a minute. And then it popped out, and I was like, wow, we totally just channeled each other.
That's how you know we relate.
Inception. But I used that wrong, good. But I don't really care. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it. You know, we had a great time doing episode 500. It's in the can. Like, I remember when we got to 300 and we were like, dude, could you imagine if we made it to 500? And now we're on the other side of 500. And I'm like,
And now I'm like, what's our goal now? Like, is it world conquest? Is it free Pop-Tarts for everyone?
Here's the thing. World conquest comes with a whole bag of worms that you have to do. You got to do infrastructure. You got to worry about coups. It's way too much work.
Fuck that.
Like, you don't, world domination and conquest, like, that is really not the bag that people think it's going to be. Really, what I think the next goal should be is, like, being able to make some awesome beer-battered onion rings on our own. Like, I saw this recipe for onion rings with cheese, mozzarella cheese in the middle.
Yes, yes.
Like, I want, that's, like, my next goal. Like, I, for the podcast.
That's not too hard to do, though.
You know, one, it's achievable. Two, it's delicious. Three, it hurts nobody.
Like, you just get the piece, the string cheese, and you wrap it on the inside of the onion rig, and then you batter it.
And you fry it, and it's delicious onion cheese in your face. So
I mean, I mastered karage after two attempts.
Yeah, I saw that.
And oh my god, they were so fucking good.
This is what happens when we start the podcast and we haven't eaten yet.
Yep, we're like, food!
Like, food! But I promise we will talk about video games and things like that. But I, like, as far as the podcast goes, you know, I think the things that we talked about a little bit last week are the next things for us, you know, for us to be able to do more video, for us to be able to go to more events and do more interviews with people. You know, we're gearing up to do video. We'll have a video actually of episode 500 up on YouTube shortly. And
yeah, special treat for all you folks who want to see us do what we do in person. You know,
Panda and I are working on ways to help her bring back Frickin' Fridays with Pandalicious.
The name is probably going to change since I'm, like, an adult now, but...
Maybe, but it might not have to. I mean, it's completely up to you. I like Frickin' Fridays with Pandalicious just because I like alliteration, but that's just me. But you it's your baby. You can do what you want. But we're also, you know, working on doing more live streaming. And, you know, the gaming systems now make it very easy for us to live stream our gameplay. So, you know, you will start to see more of that content showing up on our YouTube channel and you know, maybe even Twitch. I mean, we building a Twitch channel, you know, so there's a lot of things that are coming next. And so I won't say that they're goals, but they're definitely things that we want to achieve. You know, they're milestones for us. Being able to regularly create video content is kind of the next piece for us, you know, as we grow, at least Pan and I, a little bit out of the editorial space, because we really enjoy doing the podcast. And we kind of really enjoy doing video together when we have the opportunity to do video together. So, you know, those are things that you will see coming from us. And those will be the next steps that we do. And you know, beyond that, man, I don't know. Like, more partnerships.
Ninjas in space or sisters in space. oh, my God.
But yeah, like, I don't know. Like, you know, maybe more partnerships with other outlets so we can, you know, grow and have more resources and build a bigger community. Like, those are things that I would love to do because we love talking with you guys. Obviously, you enjoy the stuff that we write in the podcast and shows that we put out. So, you know, as long as we've got you there, we're going to continue to do stuff. So, is it 500 more? I don't know. It could be more than that. I don't know. Like, personally, for me, like, I plan on doing this thing till it's not fun anymore.
Like, bro, but, like, 10 years from now, you'll, like, be...
Watch it.
In a number that's not comfortable.
Ready? Look, 10 years
from now... And I'll be approaching that number that is not comfortable.
Let's be really real with ourselves right now, Panda. In 10 years, we're still going to be playing games.
Yeah.
We're still going to be going to superhero movies.
Yeah.
We're still going to be watching anime.
Yeah.
Okay, like, so let's be real. Are we going to not talk about this with each other?
No.
So we might as well record it and put it out, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, until it stops being fun, until it starts being a thing that, like, we aggressively have to manage around it.
Right.
Then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah, but we might have a totally different, I mean, I don't want to make this sound like this is all about me, but I mean... There might be a point where Panalicious is now Momalicious.
Exactly.
Like, and a baby.
And you know what?
That's I can't just put the baby down. It's not going to stay there. It's going to, like, climb on shit.
They don't
and
do that.
Shove things in sockets.
No, they
and
don't
itself.
Do that. But you know what? Here's what happens. Babies eventually sleep. You got to have some downtime. So even when Panalicious turns into Momalicious at some point in time, like, we'll figure it out.
Like, hey, maybe have some Benadryl.
Maybe we don't record at the same time every week on the same day. Maybe one week we have to record on this day, because this is when you've got this covered.
Or maybe like, Stuart's got soccer practice. Let's do it now.
Exactly. You know,
not that I would name my kid Stuart.
As long as it's still fun. And that's my number one rule. As long as it's still fun, we'll continue to do it. And it gets to a point where it's too much work. It's not fun. And we're not enjoying doing it, then that's when it ends. And we go look at the run that we had and move on.
And we send in the clowns.
The next thing, okay? Because, like, we're not the only thing in the land of Esh. Everybody right. that's part of our network puts out great content and great shows. So, like, all I'm saying is I don't know. I'm not setting another number goal. Like, at 100, the big deal was to get to 200. And at 200, the big deal was to get at 3. And at 3, I was like, okay, screw this. Like, let's go big. Let's see if we can do this for 500. Because that'd be 10 years. That'd be 10 years. And we did it. And we're on today right now. And I am enjoying doing this right now in this moment as much as I enjoyed doing episode 1. So for me, like, this is good.
My energy level is clearly lower now than then, but I was also naive and dumb as fuck. So,
right.
But it's a stronger sense of appreciation for what we do now with the panda now than then, because right, that panda could give zero fucks. Yeah, I grew the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean,
that's exactly what happened.
Let's be real, you grew up.
So let's talk about, great segue. Let's talk about a show that I guess talks about, like, deals with growth. In an interesting way.
I mean, that's a real stretch. It's a real stretch.
I mean, I'm trying to find positives here.
I like the attempt. I respect the attempt, but it is definitely a stretch. So we are talking about Suicide Squad on the podcast today. So this is your warning right now.
If you haven't seen it,
have not seen it at this point,
you should
just
not.
Don't listen to this episode.
Yeah.
Don't listen to this episode until you've seen the movie.
And then when you've seen it and you have your own judgments...
Come back and listen to it.
But if you have any comments or concerns or complaints about people's stances on it, because I can tell you right now that there are dissenting opinions between the two of us, you can email those to kbd@kbd.com. You can let him know how mad you are at either of our decisions about this movie.
King underscore baby underscore...
Sorry, KBD.
Oh, KBD.
You can send it to our mailbag where we won't read it.
I read everything that
comes. I know you do. I know. She'll read it and then not tell me if someone's out to murder me.
And I'll respond, you douche nozzle. Let me tell you why you're not right. Smiley face, winky face.
Anyway, sipping my tea. Dancing moving right along. So Suicide Squad. So there's been a lot of talk about this particular movie. Because,
because it was hyped beyond hype beyond
here's the thing.
A year.
Like, you got two friends, you got DC and you got Marvel. And for a while there, like, no one knew exactly what they wanted to do with these two friends. I'm not going to call them best friends. They were aware of each other. They went to parties.
DC and Marvel have not been friends. They've been ripping each other off for their characters.
They're frenemies. Really, they're frenemies.
Inception. But frenemies. What had happened was, Warner had been making some movies for a while with a couple of DC's properties, primarily Batman. Remember the Tim Burton Batman?
Remember
that? And it came out and everyone was all up and had their knickers in a twist because they were like, Michael Keaton's not the right kind of guy to play Bruce Wayne.
Batman,
and Batman's an action type figure. And then we all saw the movie and everybody shut the fuck up and was like, no, actually, great, Bruce Wayne. We're good sorry. Job, good job.
Sucking dick.
But I'll just be over here in this corner eating all this crow that I had prepared.
And we're not talking the Brandon Lee crow either. Yeah, we're not.
Which they're talking about doing a remake with, possibly with Momoa.
Yes, and here's my thought, because that man, one, he hot. Yeah. You could put him in anything, and I'll watch it, but here's the thing.
But I like the crow being, like, smaller and, like, somewhat fragile, even though he killed Brandon. But
I'm just saying, though, like, this movie kind of had, that movie had some bad juju. Like, it took somebody out. And, like, I'd hate to see something happen to that man, and then we have to mourn the death of such a hot man.
They take much better precautions now, as far as...
I'm just saying, I think that intellectual property is, like, cursed with bad juju. They need to get some people like in there. They need to smudge it with some sage.
I think pure fault. Let it go. I think, like, we had two movies. We accept it.
You just exorcise the demons out of it. You put it in some white salt, and you just let all that negativity just pull out of it.
What the world needs now is more Momoa, so don't get him hurt.
Like, take the crow's heart. Take his heart out. And, like, bury it away from the body so that you can control what damage it does to people. Haha, great segue.
I said he's Aquaman, so he can't beat a crow. Let's move on. But anyway, DC...
He was Khal Drogo, so done.
But he's Aquaman now. So now he's in the superhero world. And Drogo died. Aquaman's alive. Let's move along. I could do a whole episode. And I know that you'd be right there with me, Panda.
Yeah.
On DC versus Marvel.
Okay, I wouldn't even call it a versus because we clearly know who's winning.
Well, it depends on where you're looking, okay? Because if you're looking at comic sales, that's one battle.
I'm talking movie.
And DC's doing well there. But if you're talking DC and Marvel, it can't just be movies because they do books. They do TV show, like, they do other things, so it's not a fair thing to just do movies. What I will say is this, okay? Marvel Studio has their shit together as far as how to package an ensemble movie and sell said ensemble movie to an audience, and they eat it up. Now, initially, Marvel didn't know how to fucking do movies. That's why Sony had Spider-Man and had Spider-Man unlocked for so damn long, okay? DC, when they work with Warner, has had a hit and miss record of being able to produce decent to really good movies of their comic characters. Because here's the thing, for me, Marvel movies, they're decent, okay? The majority of them are not great. They're good. They're good, okay? Not meh, they're good, okay? I go in, I'm entertained. Maybe not from beginning to end, but overall I'm entertained.
Entertained? I am.
I come out going, man, oh man, I can't wait to see Murr. Like,
right.
I'm so excited for Black Panther.
I'm excited to see what direction they're going to take this new super Spider-Man.
Okay. You know, I'm not really sold on Spider-Man yet.
I thought he was a great one in Civil War, though. I'm glad that they went that direction, though.
I'm glad that they picked a nerdy kid, and to go nerdy kid with Spider-Man.
And I mean, Marissa Tomei, though.
Like, I love Marissa Tomei, but, like, again, and we've had our conversation about Civil War, I'm not happy with Civil War.
I know you're not.
All right, so it has...
I know you're not. It has its issues.
It has its issues, but for me, okay, the silver lining coming out of Civil War is Black Panther, not new Spider-Man. But I'm not a big Spider-Man fan to begin with.
Well, I'm just saying, with all of the flops that they've had...
That's good. We're good over there. But DC, getting back to them, like, they have struggled hard.
Yeah.
They keep falling down. They keep picking themselves up, dusting off the dirt, and then jumping into a mud pit.
Okay, like, Nolan's first Batman movie, I thought was good. Again, not great. It had some scenes in there where I was like, Jesus, Jones, and, like, everybody. Like, when they flipped that tractor trailer...
Oh, yeah.
Because I was in an IMAX theater, so a legit IMAX theater. And, like, that story's high flip, like, I might have let out a little pee. A little when that happened. Like, but it was a good movie. It wasn't great. Like, I have issues with Bale's Batman. I know that I've made those clear. You know, the loss of Heath, I think, changed kind of where some of the story was going to go in the subsequent movies and changed their path. And they felt a little off and rushed.
I agree.
Okay. And that was the reboot to bring things back to life, because that was hopefully going to be the impetus to actually kick off the universe. And it didn't happen as you got towards the end of 3.
You're right.
The whole Talia thing just messed me up.
Yeah.
But anyway, then you get into the Superman movies, which, again... I will, until probably the last breath comes out of me, argue with you that Brandon Routh got dealt a raw deal with a shitty Superman script because he did a really good job as Superman. Plus, he literally looks like he's Christopher Reeve's son. Like
So are you talking about the script for Man of Steel or the Batman vs. Superman?
No, I'm talking about the Superman before Man of Steel. So okay. Remember when Brandon Routh was in Superman and that was going to be the Superman reboot? The one with Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that one. All right. Okay, Brandon Routh looks like he could be Christopher Reeve's son. Okay, he looks like comic book Superman. But because that movie did so shittily, they capped him... capped that whole revision, and then re-rebooted Superman with Caviezel.
All right. Well, here's the thing. I don't think the Man of Steel Superman was bad, though. Like, I did not watch Man of Steel until the week before we were seeing Batman versus Superman. Because at first I was like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see Batman versus Superman. Because, one, if they're going by the canon that I remember from the few times that I, like, saw you reading stuff and heard you talk, I'm like... we know what happens. We know that Batman beats Superman. Like, that happens. It's the end. Like, I don't need to see it played out. And then the fiance was like, no, but you kind of need to understand what's going on, and you can't really get an idea of Superman at this point unless you see Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ugh, I will see Man of Steel.
And right. You need to see Man of Steel before you see Batman vs. Superman.
Because it does tie itself into the Batman vs. Superman conflict.
Yep.
And when I saw that, I was like, okay, I don't hate this movie. I could see where they're trying to set this up for later payoffs in the subsequent movies. But at the same time, I'm just like, but like, there still was a ball dropped, and I can't really pinpoint what it was in that movie that I'm like, I don't believe it. And I mean, and they even got Costner to be the dad, and that man's got
one of Superman's two dads.
Right. Well, right, and then the other one's fucking Crow, Russell Crowe, I think, right?
Like, yeah, and see, that's the deal. Like, I had issues with Man of Steel because I'm like, so you're fighting with two dads at the same time now. That's just silly.
You just got two spirit dads saying, you can do it.
Okay, but spirit dad on the ground is like, don't show people your power. Fuck them, let them die. Meanwhile, space dead dad is like, no, with great power comes great responsibility. And you're like, I'm not Spider-Man. Like, sitting down and rewatching Man of Steel, it is very dark. And I don't just mean, like, in its subject matter. I mean, physically, like, visually, it is a dark movie.
His suit is a really dark blue, and I know they were trying to get away from the comic book blue, but you could have gone cobalt. You didn't have to go, like, midnight black blue.
You didn't have to go graphite. Like, we don't have to be there. The whole movie is shot in, like, an Instagram filter, which really pisses me off.
And the fucking explanation of the freaking S, it's like, in my home world, this means, like, honor. It's like, it's an S. It's just a fucking S.
We're Superman. Like, we know. It's okay. So it's like, cool.
And it's like, ooh, it could be the Batman symbol. And the Batman symbol is, like, the symbol for, like, bat stuff. Or, like, pretty close.
I don't need to learn Kryptonian alphabet, okay?
Like,
we're good. We don't need an explanation for an S. What I need an explanation for is why you make in his first movie out, since this is a reboot, you make Superman actually kill somebody.
That's right, because he does, like, laser beam the bad guy's eyes out.
He does.
Burns him, yeah.
He kills Zod, okay? Because Zod's like, you're going to have to kill me, because if you don't, I'm going to kill them, okay? And he does, and this is supposed to be the big tormenting thing in his life. And I'm like, you guys just, like, really fucking kick the pooch here on that.
You've now made Superman the bad guy. That was not, or a bad guy.
That was not needed. That was just not needed. That was not needed.
So how would you have wanted that to play out, though? Because what? Like, he could have zoomed in for Zod. Zod still would have killed those people. Like, I don't think Superman could have...
Look, he's got him pinned down. You've got a head of steel. He's got a head of steel. Headbutt the fucker. Do you know anybody who's ever in their life been headbutted and not have to close their eyes and at least fucking blink?
Okay, true.
Headbutt the bitch. So his head goes into the ground, because you guys both have hard fucking heads. It's gonna go deep. That gives the people the chance to run out of the fucking building and keep freaking fighting till you knock his ass out and send his ass back to the... I can't think of the name of the zone now, but you send him to that... zone. Okay? That movie did not have to end that way. Alright, so now you've got this movie that is going to now be the lead-in to DCU. And they decide, no, we can't lead into DCU with this. Whole lot of people not happy with this movie. We need something else. So that's where Batman versus Superman comes back onto the table. But we need a rebooted Batman, because Christian Bale doesn't really want to be Batman again. And we actually don't really want him to be Batman again.
So who do we have relatively close in age?
So you bring Batfleck.
Who could be an older Batman, a more, I want to say dark-seated, but that's not what I mean. Like, he's very seasoned in the negativity of the nature of his work.
Because Christian Bale's Batman was young, just developing Batman, right?
Right.
He's just on the heat, just basically in the beginnings of the big bat cave. He's just started his vigilante work, starting to gear up, just dealt with his first few.
So the hope of really turning things around is still prevalent in his eyes.
He's still doing it from a place of wanting to preserve justice, and there's still a glimmer of positivity in there. Okay, but you need a Batman, since you're going to be doing this dark thing with Cavill. But you need a Batman that is just as dark. So you need to age him. He can't be Bale's Batman. He needs to be older. He needs to be more jaded, I think is the word.
Yes. Okay. He's disillusioned. There's a disillusion over what he's doing.
He's been doing this thing for a while now and realizes that people don't change. Times do. But, like, for the most part,
For every head you lop off, another head grows back.
Right. Two more come back, and they're just as bad, if not worse, right?
Yeah.
So you need that bat. That's fine. That's also fine. I'm okay with that. But where they went with...
It's like, man, I hate you. I hate you. Catty, catty, catty. Oh, my God, I'm going to kill you. Is your mom's name Martha? Yes. We're best friends now. Oh, my God. Like, I saw that, right? I'm like, no. They're both named Martin. Yeah. They're going to have that moment like in Step Brothers where they realize they've become best friends and become bunk beds.
Catalina Wine Mixer. And then Wonder Woman shows up.
I feel really bad for Gal Gadot because they did not nearly give her enough screen time. at all. Look, don't get me wrong. The woman is gorgeous. And, watching her wear pretty dresses, I would watch that.
Look.
But don't brand it as a Wonder Woman movie when she's hardly ever Wonder Woman in the movie.
I am fearful for DCU right now in movies, okay? And based off of those things, right? Because I stop
making trailers that make things look more interesting than they are. Speaking of which.
Wait, hold on. We got to finish this because we actually have to get to Suicide Squad, which we said we were going to talk about.
Yes.
Because it all leads into it. So getting it to the end of Batman versus Superman, which is a setup for Wonder Woman, I'm fearful for Wonder Woman, and now I'm terrified about Suicide Squad.
Well, yeah, you know, because
they pushed it back a little bit because they went in and they did some re-edits. Now, re-edits on things are nothing new. Okay,
right.
Movies go through them all the time. But when you hear about re-edits on a superhero film, specifically a DC one, you start to maybe have heart palpitations.
Just a little bit.
Because I love the DC universe. I really do. And I want them to have a movie that is just as enjoyable for me as a fan of their universe as the Marvel movies are. Because I do leave a Marvel movie entertained. Even if I'm pissed off at the movie, the action's usually on point. There's some witty banter in there. There's usually a throw or an homage or some kind of, hey, for all of you fans of the universe, here's a homage or a nod for you guys that I pick up that most other people don't pick up. And I'm like, yeah, I get it.
And sometimes their setup for a payoff may not be correct in terms of canon, but they deliver the payoff that we are expecting, right. And then you're like, yes!
And you're like,
satisfaction.
Even though that's not correct, but it's like so good, like I'm with you.
Like, alright, I see why you went left instead of right, I don't know how I feel about it, but I see we got to that intersection anyway, so I ain't too mad.
So nearly to say, Suicide Squad had me panicked. Because every trailer I saw after the first one after Comic-Con, before we even got to the re-edits, almost every trailer that I saw for the movie after Comic-Con prominently featured the Joker. And I was terrified because, one, I wasn't completely sold yet on Jared Leto's Joker. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
But the Suicide Squad was not about Joker.
Right.
Okay. It was much more about Waller and really Deadshot and Killer Croc and even Captain Boomerang more than...
I feel bad for Boomerang.
Anybody else.
They didn't give too much.
And so as I kept seeing these trailers come out and it's just... You know,
Harley Quinn with her bat, screenshot of Joker with some knives pointing at him,
right.
Some explosions, and then the title screen.
Joker with some kind of shocking system, and then making a line, and then Harley's laugh, and Panic at the Disco covering Bohemian Rhapsody,
yeah.
And trailer. Like, I just started having massive palpitations.
I understand.
Because I'm like, oh, they're going to fuck this. They're going to fuck this like they fucked Superman.
Not even, because at least they took Superman out to lunch. They didn't even give these guys a taco.
Cavill and Affleck, ate well on that movie.
Yeah.
You know,
and these guys all got,
And then, of course, as you know...
taco truck.
As you know, I have some issues with Will Smith as an actor.
Yes, I know you do. And all of our fans know it because we've talked about him ad nauseum here.
I mean, here's the thing. I love Will when Will acts. I don't love Will when Will acts like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in blah, blah, blah role.
Right. Got it.
Okay. Like, when he does the Big Willy thing as this person, I'm just like, no, you're just...
Wild Wild West, get out of here.
Right, you're just regurgitating that same character, except now you put on Western-like clothes. It's the same guy. If I close my eyes, I'm going to expect to hear Uncle Phil come in the room any minute and be like, why are you acting so silly, Will?
For one, James Avery should be in every movie if he weren't... He's dead. No. So, now we just... It's too bad he didn't get to do Ghost Dad. Because you know how awesome...
Reginald Bell Johnson, though, is still alive.
Okay. All right. But, okay.
And he is basically... He should be, every black dad in every movie. He really should. The good dad, the attentive dad. It should just be Reginald Bell Johnson. But anyway, so I'm having heart palpitations about Suicide Squad. So I stop looking at any trailer. I start hiding every post that comes across my feeds on social that mention it because I want to go into it clean. And I don't want to be herded into any kind of pre-seeing the movie jaded space. So I duck all of it. And I don't see the movie opening weekend either. So nope, trying to duck people talking about it opening weekend was really difficult, but I was working my ass off, so I wasn't able to see it opening weekend. But I did start to hear about how its opening numbers were really high on its Friday and its Saturday, and they dropped on Sunday. And so my heart sank, because I was like, shit, people saw it, and they had some nasty shit to say, and now people aren't going to see. But I'm still avoiding all of that, and I finally go and see the movie. And I think I texted you right after I saw it.
Yeah. I was like, have you seen it yet? And you're like, yes, I think. Beep.
Well, I believe the message went something more along the lines of, okay, so let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. Also, I saw Suicide Squad. And you responded, and?
Yeah.
What did you think? And as I'm writing, you send a message and you're like, you hated it, right? And I was like, and I finished typing my sentence and I was like, yeah. I really enjoyed it. And you were like,
and I was like, what? Yes. So let's talk about that. So obviously, I did not read the comics. I am purely that person who sees a movie, absorbs what she gets from that mythos, then goes back and does research to see where the continuity or the issues that people have, and then I try to justify why I think Hollywood took a different approach. Okay. So, like, I try to be as critical about that as possible.
You're the freaking Swiss in this situation, basically.
I'm just like, I need to see both sides of the coin, guys, before I can decide which side is pretty, okay? Aww. Like, let me look at both, and then I'll decide. I can't just say this one blindly. I need knowledge.
Both sides are pretty.
So here's my thought going into Suicide Squad, because I did not initially want to see it. The hype was very negative, and the fiancé was like, let's just go see it. It won't be as bad as X-Men Apocalypse. And I'm like, that is really sad that you have to, you saying that does not make me say.
That's your bar.
Right, exactly. I'm like, that's pretty low. We could go see Nine Lives with Kevin Spacey as a talking cat.
Right, that's going to be
and
better.
And be more amused.
Than Apocalypse.
But anyway, so we go to see this movie, and I mean, I saw some of the trailers, and I mean, the trailers were very misleading, even after the read-in.
The trailers are damn misleading.
So, like, if you just saw the trailers, you'd be like, oh, this looks like a ragtag, rogue bunch of, like,
side guys.
I mean, in the first trailer, like when they really kind of try to make it look like here are these bad guys who kind of like Wreck-It Ralph, bad guys who may not necessarily be completely bad guys, you know, with Will Smith and his kind of heart of gold, yet I kill people thing. And I'm just like, I don't know about that. But the trailers kind of gave you the sense of, okay, these band of bad guys who have always been thinking about themselves, may now work in this unit where they may not just think about themselves and stealing shit. Okay, premise seems kind of good. Then you've got Amanda Waller.
Viola Davis.
Who is amazing.
Boss
like,
lady.
She comes walking out in that signature, you know, two-piece business suit, skirt biz, with that don't fuck with me face. I'm like, all right, Amanda Waller, like, maybe you could be the saving grace of this movie.
Viola Davis as Amanda Waller takes resting bitch face to an art form.
Like, you should compete in the Olympics with that type of resting bitch face.
Okay.
Like anti-zero fucks are given in that face.
Seriously, like, Amanda Waller is not a admirable character in the comics.
No.
She's not. Okay, she is a ends justify the means always.
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 Chips person. Are in.
Okay.
Here we go.
She is, like, just shy of really truly being a gangster. And in some of the comics, she's actually drawn that way. She is drawn like a big boss, like, big, beefy bitch.
Like, yeah.
Like
there's weight and gravitas to everything she does.
I mean, like, drawn, like, built like Kingpin or Killer Croc. Like, she's Cock Diesel. Okay? And so to have somebody that, in such a small frame. Because Viola Davis is not a big
so
woman.
Much.
Okay?
No,
but, like, I believed it.
And yes, you did. You clearly believed
it. But here's
that.
The thing. Like, even though she's taken names in the whole movie.
Oh, my
like,
God.
She scrubs her
oh man, her team
unit.
Like here I'm thinking, you know, burn
she's
everything.
Gonna get some paperwork off the desk.
Nah.
And as soon as I heard that gluck cock, I was like, oh, she's taking out the room.
Right, because they were not versed in, they weren't supposed to figure out what they were really doing.
Ends justify means. She was like, they weren't cleared anyway.
Right. And then the freaking, what's the guy? He was not nearly as memorable.
Let's call him Sergeant Rick.
Sergeant, help my girlfriend, please. Like, oh my god. Whiny McBitch.
I left Suicide Squad a bigger fan of Amanda Waller.
Yeah. Well, like, here's the thing about that, though, because like, you watch the movie, because we haven't really talked about it. So, So we've got the best of the best villains. They're all locked up in asylum because Amanda's been collecting them like fucking Gotham Pokemon.
Argus,
okay. Correction.
Holding them because the majority of them were actually captured by Batman. Argus did not capture all of them.
Okay. Not either way.
It was the Bat who turned them over to Amanda, because when you stay and watch the after credits, you get the payoff of why Batman did it.
Right. Yeah, you do. You get
so it. So you kind of need to say that.
And that was kind of a loose throwaway, which we'll talk about a little bit, too.
That was so loose.
So the Batman does his Batman thing, gets all these baddies, gives them to Amanda Waller, who locks them all up in Argus, and they're just kind of existing in this place.
Yep.
You know, and you see all the little establishing shots, you know, Harley acting kind of hot, weird in her cell.
Robbie did a great job, and I'm glad she's getting a spinoff.
I liked her Harley Quinn.
I liked Jared Leto's Joker. We'll get to that.
Yeah, but, I mean, everyone gets their establishing shot. Like, you got Killer Croc down in the sewer, not because they forced him, because he wanted to be down there.
Yep.
Like, but here's the thought, also with Killer Croc, is, like, he's always been a big menacing threat. And while he did have a big personality and presence, they made him small in this movie.
Yeah, they did.
Which I was like, he should be bigger than all of them. Which is why he's a menace. I remember watching you play whichever of the Arkham games where you have to fight him.
Yeah.
And, like, you had me playing first. And when I got to that, I was like, no, I'm not fighting that. No. And then he killed me, like, 8 times. I was like, I'm done. I got so fed up, but they made him small, which was a little weird.
Yeah, his build is very similar to Captain Boomerang.
You know, and speaking about Captain Boomerang, so okay, we have this guy who can rob banks, and yes, he uses a boomerang. I'm sure there's more of a story there. They don't really touch it. He's an Aussie who steals shit, and he has a boomerang.
Basically.
And, you know, and then you've got the, like, Indian guy who can climb anything. That didn't help him much in his situation. He got maybe 8 minutes of screen time total. Because they had to kill somebody to show that these collars are no joke.
Right. And so I knew when they introduced him, I was like, and there's your walking dead guy.
Yep. He walking. The clock is ticking. How long are you here for? But anyway. But here's this group that they have now amassed, and Amanda Waller has the best idea of, hey, let's take these really highly seasoned, insane nut jobs and make them do this thing. Because, so one of the other special people, I don't know what they call them in the DC universe, like accelerated humans or whatever, that she has.
Metahumans.
Okay. So the metahuman she has that seems to be, and as soon as she showed her, I was like, you have no control over that. Like, it's when they introduce Enchantress. It's like, oh, yeah, I have a heart, and she'll do whatever I say. Really? Yeah, go get this paperwork from, like, Afghanistan. Boom, you have it. It's like, yeah, you have a heart, but, you know, she's not going to let you hold it for very much longer. She wants it back, and she's just figuring out when the right time is to do that. I was just waiting for that clock to come down, and I'm like, you know, you're going to be sleeping one day, Amanda, and she's just going to, like, whisper Enchantress. And this is all speculation before I've actually seen it. I'm like, she's going to, like, turn the corner and be walking the Pentagon, and June is going to say, like, Enchantress, and then she's going to take her shit, and then you guys are fucked. Because she's, like, a witch of, like, unspeakable power. And, of course, that's kind of what happens. Amanda Waller falls asleep, and June's asleep, and in her sleep, she whispers for Enchantress, and Enchantress totally comes up and takes her shit. Or rather, she finds her brother in, like, because they took his heart, too. And, like, they put him in a black guy who was a throwaway character. And here he is just powering up the Enchantress to do this fucking shit. And they decide that they're just going to send all these bad guys in to kind of take her out, even though he probably in good consciousness could not in that fight, I don't think, would have won that. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think Enchantress would have wiped them all out. Like, and that would have been it. But the big thing about this movie that really kind of threw me off, there are two things, one and two, I'm counting, that really made me sour about this movie. The first one is the fact that, like, I love Amanda Waller. She's got her shit. And I know that Enchantress is using her knowledge to find all the bases to use her, like, magical mech magic that she's, like, been making in the movie to take out all the bases and whatever. But couldn't she just have absorbed that knowledge and then killed her? Like, Amanda Waller could have totally been taken out with, like, the bat of an eye. And the fact that she survives it practically intact is a little surprising to me. Like, she should have been far more messed up than she was. Just walking out with her phone, like, I could still blow up your heads, bitches. The end. Like, it didn't feel proper for the capture and the use of her. And then to keep her completely unscathed, really, outside of scrubbing her whole team and all of that. It was a little too magic Negro for me.
So, here's the deal. Like, Amanda Waller has to survive because...
Right, but she didn't have to, like, walk out like she hasn't been, like, hurt. Like, she should have been messed up.
She was,
like,
in a plane crash. She got cut up. Like, she also was hung upside down and had those things drilled into her fucking head so that they... Enchantress could figure out, like, all the places she needed to strike. So it's not like she went completely unscathed.
I'm just saying that she kind of walked out, like, she came from the side angle of the shot, so we don't know where she came from. Here she comes in the shot
because
with her
Amanda
phone.
Amanda Waller is a badass.
I think a little too
okay,
bad.
Like,
too much badass.
Like, invaded her. She still was just like, man, it's a Tuesday. I'm Amanda Waller. Let's do this shit.
Like,
and walked out because
sorry.
That's just...
I think her charisma was too high for that role. Sorry.
Here's the thing. Like, I personally, I think Viola Davis was absolutely fantastic.
I'm not discrediting that.
I
just
more
think
Amanda
that they,
Waller in the movie.
I'm
and
just
I think
that
again.
They, took too many liberties. Like, I think there should have been more physical struggle there. It looked a little too easy.
It can't. Amanda Waller can't show any signs of any weakness. If she does, she's not Waller.
I'm sad.
That's just not right for the character. So I hear what you're saying, like, as a person and as a woman, you're like, there's no way I just walk out of that room and there's not, you know, something other than me bleeding, which she was, that you see on me that lets you know that I went through something traumatic. However... Amanda Waller is not just some woman, okay?
Right, like, I get...
The one thing that I will say that, like, the Flash series has gotten correct is the skinny little wimpy chick that they have playing Amanda Waller, she was the badass up until she took the bullet to the head.
Okay?
Like, Amanda Waller is not just... A fragile woman. She would never show weakness. That's why she told Enchantress to come on and bring it on. Like, there's not a second's hesitation, a second's fear. That's just how Amanda Waller works.
Right.
She doesn't show it.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, I think there should have been more of a physical representation of what she's been through. Even if
it's crap that makes her make the decisions that she makes. Like, that's how she manifests her insecurity.
All right. Well, anyway, so that's number one. Number two for me that really kind of pulled me out of this movie was the relationship between Harley Quinn and the Joker. And yes, there's a relationship there. Clearly, you can see it in all the comics. You've seen it in every other adaptation.
I disagree, but go ahead.
The relationship that they show in this movie, I think, was far too caring and concerning. Their relationship was never grounded in anything serious or real. The Joker never cared about her as strongly as they kind of half showed it in this movie. He tortured her. She was a plaything. She had Stockholm Syndrome. He kind of causes her to have that psychotic break to become his minion. And he was horribly abusive to her. He never would have busted her out, ever. I think he would have let her rot until she figured her way out. Don't think he would have busted her out. Two, like... How the fuck did he manage to get the guy to get the phone so that she could, like, peace out whenever the fuck? No, I'm sorry. And then when he put with the whole vat thing, when she, like, falls into the vat.
Get it all out of your system because I'm going to correct all your shit.
like, she falls into the vat, which apparently in the comics he initially pushed her, but whatever. Like, she commits herself to the change of whatever that chemical is supposed to do, and then he does the weird grunty sniff thing, which I've never known the Joker to grunt like an animal. I'm sorry. And then he turns it around.
Joker, non-existing Joker. Please continue.
And dives in to go get her. And then they, like, make out in it. I'm like, no, 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 no,
so
no.
So here's where the correction comes in. You're only half off.
Okay. It just didn't feel genuine for what I'd expect the relationship to look like.
Here's the thing. So there you go with problem number one. You went in with an expectation. You went in with an expectation of what Joker and Harley should be. You can't do that for Suicide Squad because it is not, as you look at the DC Universe, canon.
Okay.
All right, now let's take a step back.
All right, go ahead, bring the corrections because I'd love for some clarity
here.
Here's
the deal. The Joker is absolutely abusive to Harley. He causes her break. He causes her Stockholm Syndrome and then uses her, okay? But there have been many times that Harley has been captured, and eventually the Joker does come for her. The Joker only comes for Harley, however, when it is advantageous to him, meaning there is something that he needs that only Harley can do, which is typically be the stooge for.
Okay.
Okay. But still, when there is a need for Puddin',
he gets Puddin'.
He gets Puddin'. So he has broken her out of Arkham. He has gotten her away from Batman. Like, that has happened. Okay? So, no, Joker would come after a newly minted minion. Okay? Because remember the way that they chopped up this movie? Harley gets him the ammo that he needs, and then he starts to go to work on her to convert her because he wants her as his own. Right. Not because he loves her, but because he is obsessed with breaking her and obsessed with what he can get her to do, which is why in the movie, instead of him pushing her into the vat, he makes her beg for it and drop herself in, okay? And then anxiously waits for her to pop up because it's either you survived the thing or you didn't. And when she doesn't, the grunt for me is him begrudgingly going, all right, I'm going to go and get her because I've put in all this work and we're going to see this fucking shit through. And jumps in and lifts her up and then they make out.
Make
out. Because his experiment has been successful. Because remember, when you get all the way down to Killing Joke, it's all about proving that a bad day
can change anybody.
And Harley is the proof, but just on a smaller level than Joker really wanted, that that can happen because he turns Dr. Quinzel into a minion that will take being jackbooted in the stomach and come back and slapped across the face and thrown in as a shield for his getaway. I am perfectly fine with the Joker basically having Harley and using her as his trophy. Okay, that's what that whole scene in the club is about. Is like, she is his trophy. And because not only did he get out of Arkham.
Right, but he got her too.
But he got her too. And so she's on display and he's toting around all of his toys and what he got away with.
It's like, hey, Common, you want a piece of that? No, you don't.
Oh,
you don't want a piece of
that?
Just
acting like it and like getting all jealous because, and then killing him.
And then killing him. You know, poor Common. He does not get a break in a lot of movies.
He just really doesn't. Okay. So I was actually perfectly fine with, after her getting locked up, Joker not spending all of his time, but the way that they cut it, it looked like he was spending all of his time. Evidently, there are other scenes of other things that he was doing. And the Harley, getting Harley back was just a side piece of that. But right, for whatever reason, I'm guessing for time, they cut that out. Because even Lita was like, yeah, I was really surprised to see how little I was in the movie because we shot a lot more stuff. So I think that, you know, when the director's cut comes out, you'll see that there are like other heists and shit that he was working on. And for whatever reason, they realized that they needed Harley, or he decided he really needed Harley to do it.
Okay.
Or so frankly, they
didn't establish what his motivation was to get her. They made it unclear. So they pasted it to make it look like he was so focused with getting her back.
And I think that this is part of the recut. I think that there was a lot more Joker in the original movie. And they went, oh shit, we fucked up.
We can't make this about Joker. Cut him out.
Make this about Joker. So they cut that back and amped up more of the Deadshot stuff.
Right, because, I mean, he got second top billing in that, I think, our friend there.
And originally, like, all the lead-off trailers and stuff, it was Leto and the Joker. So I think that that was part of the recut. But anyway, I was perfectly fine with the balance that they had of Joker to Harley. And the way that they cut it in that, you know, Joker was just trying to get to Harley to get his trophy back. Because I think it was more of like he felt incomplete without his trophy more than he missed Harley. Like even the daydream about the family and the lifestyle and things like that was Harley's
right
hallucination, not Joker's.
Right, I know.
Okay. So like, and that fits because that's what Harley would, should, could be.
I think in her mind, I think that's what she sees.
Like in her mind, like exactly, that's how they've always been. Like even when they do the thing to, you know, Tim Drake. It's
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And again, part of that was at Harley's impetus, but striking the chord of like outside of Harley, like Joker has no heir apparent. He has no one to carry on his mantle. So anyway, I thought that was fine. I thought the way that they used Enchantress was interesting. It wasn't what I expected.
I think it was simple. Like I think they could have done a lot more with a creature that had that kind of power. Like, I think they dumbed that down quite a bit.
Well, but I feel like you have to, right? Because you have an ensemble thing. So you can't spend way too much time on each of these characters. Otherwise, we're looking at, you know, a Lord of the Rings 3.5 hour fucking film, and nobody's gonna like a 3.5 hour film.
I mean, unless you...
I don't care. Like, I don't care.
But I mean, and then you have characters who have the lightest introduction that... You see them fighting, but you really don't understand their motives for fighting. So, like, you got the chick with the blade that can trap your souls and shit, and here she is whining and bitching at it because, you know, the person who used it before her killed her husband with it, so a soul's in there. And it's like, here I am crying to my dead husband's soul in this thing. It's like, you know, you could have just had her kill Enchantress and put the soul in there, and then, like, then kill all the bad guys.
But here's the problem.
Like, clean it up.
But here's the problem. Because you don't have a guarantee that using that blade against Enchantress just takes Enchantress's soul and doesn't take...
Right, June's, which I'm sure they were balancing. I'm just saying, you have these people who have these great abilities that could clean up a lot of your mess. And they never even really address, like, why don't we just, like... Like, it could have been something that, like...
She's not an all-blazing sword, either. She's actually got to get close to Enchantress, which you know, if you watch the movie.
Hard. Right.
It's a little difficult to do. I mean, true. Diablo basically has to sacrifice himself, which is bullshit.
Man.
But like, he has to sacrifice himself to even give them the shot at getting to her.
Right. Here's the thing, though. At the beginning, when they were talking about all of them and whatever, and the fact that he gave himself in, I'm like, you're going to be the one who sacrifices himself. Because, one, you're already ready to live out your existence in that iron lung.
Yep.
And rot it out. Because you were already resentful of the actions that you took.
Right.
You're repetitive. And you want to be purified. And, of course, fire in a lot of religions like that, fire is the best way to do that. So here's your ability that allows you to do that. And at the same time, when that happens, you got that Navy SEAL who's underneath them when they blow that up. He's dead. That 2 seconds did not give him enough time to swim away. That man's life is over.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
He's not going to be dead, but he did.
He did.
Again, you know, when you're dealing with what you're dealing with, like, you have to be prepared to die.
Right.
And that's the thing. And I think that, you know, the way that they set up Diablo, his repentance makes sense. His sacrificing himself makes sense. The only thing that, like, I even questioned about that, and it was, like, really the only, like, small question I had about the whole movie, because really from beginning to end, I thought the movie was paced well. I thought that they did a good job of introducing all of the characters that needed to be introduced in a somewhat deep way for this story. Because remember, there's going to be more Suicide Squads, which means in the next one, we're probably going to get to spend more time with Joker and Harley. Because Harley's got to get back to Belle Reve. She
right.
can't just be out there in the world being all crazy-ass Harley. Plus, there's whatever kind of underlying thing between Harley and Deadshot that they're setting up.
I know, now they're going to be two best friends.
Okay. And
I heard initially that one of the original cuts, like during that whole scene, because Carly's waiting for the right opportunity for hubby Bubby to show up and like whisk her away. And here she is on the rope doing her like acrobatics, whatever. And Amanda's like, hey, Deadshot, I'll give you this much money and pay for your daughter's college for the rest of your life if you kill her right now. And he's all like, yeah, because that's kind of what Deadshot does. But apparently in one of the cuts, she actually gets all the way up and the Joker pushes her out. But they took that cut out.
That would fit.
It would fit the dynamic.
But ultimately, like, here's where we end up. I think that Suicide Squad, this movie, does a better job of setting up the integral characters for the plot, for the story that they're telling. Because you needed some background on Amanda Waller, and you needed to see her in a badass, and you needed to understand how her thought process works. And yep. But you do, because if you don't understand her thought process, she just comes off as a calculating bitch, and that's not the only depth to Amanda Waller. Okay, where it all comes from is really and truly a fear of the unknown.
Okay. Right.
And that's why she's able to push herself to all the extremes that she pushes herself and other people around her.
She has no problem sacrificing them pawns, son. Or a couple of knights.
A pawn, a knight, fuck. She will sacrifice a bishop if it gets her, the queen, ultimately to that goal. Period. Right. End. Period. End. Easy, sleepful, restful night.
I know. She always seemed like the one that scene where she's sleeping. I'm like, I'm surprised that she can sleep that easy at night.
That's Amanda Waller. And you need Amanda Waller set up well in this first Suicide Squad movie. Otherwise, the subsequent movies don't make sense. Okay, you have to believe that she would be the bitch that would, after them actually achieving their goals, still be like, motherfuckers, get your ass in the truck. We going back to Belle Reve. And like, we did all of that. We saved the whole world. And we're going back to Belle Reve. And you're only taking 10 years off. And whip out the phone and be like, be glad I don't bust out your head.
I'd be like, hey, I could just, you know, tap that. Oh, by the way, I'll let you see your daughter, Deadshot. Because, I mean, you know, stuff. Reasons.
Okay, fine. You did save the world. Everybody gets one request. What do you want? Killer Croc wanted BET in his
sewer. And he got BET in his sewer.
He got BET in his sewer. Like, you know, again, that's absolutely right. You know, you need to for this story, the way they wanted to focus it, you needed to give Deadshot a redeeming...
Well, here's the thing. He was always kind of on the side of... For me, he never came off as a strongly bad guy. He was just a guy who did this job.
Well, take a step back. So Floyd Lawton was in the military, okay?
Okay.
And he was a law-abiding soldier. But he came back with PTSD.
Okay.
Was not able to,
get over that.
A balanced way, remain with his wife and kid. And that broke him. So that's why he went gun for hire route.
Okay.
Because he was a great
marksman
to begin with. And then fell in with some crowds, with some people who...
All right.
Hit him up with some gear and allowed him to become even better. So that's why he stayed on the gun for hire thing. So he started from a place of defending my country and people,
a righteous
place, and ended up in this gun for hire spot. But it was always, you know, the way that he's been treated, especially in some of the TV shows that are out, he's always been treated as, yeah, a rough guff kind of loner, gun for hire, but at the core, whenever you bring up his family, whenever you bring up his daughter, whenever you bring up something that will benefit his kid, like, he's in. And right. Ultimately, he does sacrifice himself in, I want to say it's Arrow, for the greater good. You know, and it's just like, make sure that my daughter knows that her dad was a hero and not all the things that everybody else says, and allows the good guys to get away and ends up in an explosion and dies or whatever. You got to get that across, because that is a known world, and that ultimately makes Lawton's character out of this entire group really the, outside of Diablo, the most redeemable, right? Because the way the Suicide Squad was originally set up was, it was basically a work release program. Just the way that Amanda Lawler set it up is that, okay, you're a super duper bad guy, but we have some missions that are like completely off the books, and we need to be able to not...
We need them done, but we can't just go in and do them.
And we need to be able to disavow all knowledge if people get caught and fucked up. So here's the deal. If you run these ops for us, we will take time off your sentence, and we will allow you to do some things back out in the real world, which right now you have no chance in hell of ever seeing the light of day. And that's why so many people ended up in the Suicide Squad, because it's a revolving squad. Like, it's not always the same members. Like, people come in and out from various issues. Like, Diablo came in and, like, some of the early ones, and then left a couple issues later because he just, like, decides he's completely out and just wants to serve out his sentence. So he does. Harley leaves after one of the early ones, but winds up back 4 or 5 issues later, and then she's just a running member of the squad. But there are multiple people that come in and out. Like, Lawton is believed dead at one point. You've got Boomerang that comes back and forth, no pun intended, a few times. You've got Light. I mean, there's all kinds of people. Like, the people that are in this movie are not the ones that are just in this movie. So that's why I'm like, I feel bad that Diablo died. But at the same time, I'm like, if you went by strict canon, which obviously these guys are not, he'd be leaving anyway and just commuting and doing his sentence. And, you know, that's one of the
reasons. Right, so
It's the only negative thing I have to say in the movie. Like, for the majority of the movie, like, Diablo is like, nope, not using my power. Like, nope, not doing that. Like, I'm not that guy anymore. I'm not doing those things. Deadshot pisses him off, so he finally uses his power and then sees how destructive he is. Well, a piece of how destructive he is. And then he's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. And
like,
then,
I was just saying that to get you there.
And then you have, like, the next segment of the movie where he's still like, yeah, I don't trust my power and I don't want to go out of control, so I don't want to use it. And even going into the final battle with Enchantress, he's still just like, yeah, but, you know, like, what if I use my power and I can't control it and I can't do it? And he's like, but we're here, so don't worry about it, we got it. And he's like, okay, all right, I'm gonna try. And even at that, so he's still, like, reluctant about using his power. And then, right, like, I forget who it is, it's like Harley gets hit or somebody on the team gets hit, and he's like, I got this. You're not taking another family from me. And just, like, out of no place.
Full on Diablos.
And, like, that's the only, just the pacing of that is the only thing that I really took up any issue after watching the movie, walking away from it. Like, that switch was just a little too fast for me. Like, I feel like he should have been on the I'm going to protect my family trip before they walked into the fight with Enchantress. Like, basically at the...
I mean, they had the bonding moment at the bar where they were all kind of...
Before the bar, like, the moment that he used his power was, like, when, for me, like, they needed to have, like, something right there where, like, they bonded before they got to the bar. Because the bar was just, like, the, fuck all these people, like, we're done.
Right.
They were already cohesive before the bar happened. So I'm missing a scene there where he just embraces that he can actually use his power towards a good thing as opposed to the bad thing that happened with his family.
Right.
That's the only thing. Like, everything else about the movie,
I was kind of upset that they threw out the waterline that we got in the trailer, but we didn't get in the movie when they're in the bar and they're all getting drinks. And, like, Harley's like, what are you drinking? He's like, water. And she's like, actually, good idea. Like, that would, I thought, especially because of the lineup with him using his powers and, like, him being hot-headed.
Yep.
Like, that was a great joke.
Yeah.
And I was expecting to see it, and they cut it out of the movie. And I walked out, I'm like, why did they cut that out?
Yeah, because,
like,
that was a good line.
That was a good line. So I was like, ugh, Mike, you guys dropped so many balls, man.
But again.
For me.
Again, the re-edit. So, you know, like, I want to see what the movie was supposed to be like. So I will be picking up Suicide Squad when it comes out on digital. Because, you know, they're going to include all the deleted scenes and, like, the gag reel and all kinds of other crap. So I really want to see what those deleted scenes were.
I think they did that with the Batman Superman, because there were several scenes that got cut out of that, which would have made so much more sense.
And the movie does make more sense. It still sucks. But it makes more sense.
Right.
With those scenes in.
Sense doesn't mean good. Sense just means it makes sense. A point. There's a point there now.
You can follow the logic because it has some.
Right. Exactly.
But I will say this, I actually thoroughly enjoyed Suicide Squad. I like Suicide Squad way more than Batman versus Superman, way more than Apocalypse, more than Civil War.
Oh God, Apocalypse was just...
Yeah, that's what it is. But I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this movie. And I will say this, whether you're a fan... if you read any of the comics, you know, Silver Age on or not, it doesn't matter. If you go into this movie with no preconceived notions, It's a good action movie. There's some really clever, funny lines in it. The character development pace is good. It's not too fast. It's not too slow overall. And it's just fun at points. You know, the soundtrack, the music that they picked was fantastic. Just don't watch the Purple Lamborghini video with Rick Ross because it makes, like, absolutely no sense. It's kind of cut like the movie.
Okay. Okay.
And that, like, Joker just appears out of no place and you're just like, why? Why are Rick Ross, the Joker, and Skrillex standing on a boat in Miami in the sunrise, but there's, like, some kind of heist going on in the middle of the night? I don't understand. I don't know. Just go with it. Purple Lamborghini. And that's what I got for this week, so.
That's all I got.
I mean, for you, like, ultimate the ending day, did you enjoy the movie or not? Because that's the only thing that really matters.
I mean, I will say that there was a positive coming out of the movie only because, one, it sparked a lot of conversation. And
Harley's getting her own movie. Go, Margot Robbie.
I had a positive experience walking out of the movie, even though I had some serious issues with certain things that happened in the movie. I would see another Suicide Squad with the caveat that, one, it's a different team with a different scenario. And
well, it's
maybe
not going to be a full different team. You're going to have joke because they busted.
No. At the end. Right. No, I mean, Harley's probably going to be a stable. But I mean, like, her, Deadshot, and, like, maybe a callback to somebody else that we had in the first movie. Like, we see them again, or they somehow help out the current Suicide Squad, but aren't necessarily a part of the current team and the mission. And, like, maybe just a little bit more logic in the next one. And, I mean, Amanda Waller just has to always be present.
Waller's always going to be in it. Probably in the next one you're definitely going to have Joker and Harley. You're going to have Deadshot. You will more than likely have some new people pop in. Because, again, it's a revolving door. And that's a beautiful thing about this franchise, is that because of the way that the comic works, you know, the team is not always the same. Very much like the Avengers. There are people that come
right.
and go. The
Avengers exactly.
is this massive team, much like Justice League, which this movie sets up at the end.
Yep.
Very hastily, by the way.
It's all, hey, by the way, you need to stop working nights. Like, it was, the line was so throwaway. It's like, here are these three pictures that we saw from this other movie. I don't know why you need these people. He's like, I just need some more friends. You need to stop working nights. And then it, like, cuts to, like, credits.
Like, seriously, I really just needed a world star horn to go off at the end of that.
Nah, not even. She could have just passed the folder. He opens it. You see the pictures. He'd be like, time to get the team together, and then slam the thing shut. That's it. That could have been it.
Okay.
Getting the league together. Some stupid corny lines like
it
that.
It was such a hasty thrown on thing. That's my thing.
You know, it would have been funny if we had gotten cuts of that conversation, like during the points where, like, Waller, like, the helicopter goes down and she's being pursued and, like, you know,
she has a flashback thought of, like...
Like, you see her sitting at the table, and she's, like, holding the file. And, like, you got snippets of that, so you see that she's contemplating this much bigger action that is happening during this.
So that her solution isn't the only solution out there, you know?
Right, like, exactly.
She's aware of it. I agree. I think that would have been a better way to cut that in. And then, you know, the end credit is Bruce Wayne, like, in the cave going through the file.
Right.
And
like he already has the picture that he got from Wonder Woman, but now he's got the files and now the contact can begin.
I feel like that would have been much better rather than like this really hastily. It just felt tacked on. It felt hastily tacked on. Where mostly after credit stuff for the Marvel movies never feels hastily tacked on.
Because I think for those things like the shawarma after this type of deal, like I think they already recorded it. Like, it wasn't an afterthought. Like, they already had it in their schedule to shoot it.
This was an afterthought.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we should totally have this scene. Get Ben Affleck.
Okay, so how do we get... All right, so how do we work in Affleck and Waller to make the Justice League, like, throw? Oh, they're going to have dinner somewhere, and he's going to be, like, needing this file that Amanda has. Well, why does Amanda have these people? Does she think that they're bad, and she wants to target them for artists? But no, she's going to hand them over to Bet. Like, it just feels tacked on. And that's, again, I...
Well, like, I don't know why she would do that, because it seems like she had some metahumans that were pro her cause, like with the girl with the soul-sucking knife, like the sword, sorry. So it's not like she has to, you know, go for people who are imprisoned. There are some who seem to come more willingly. And, I mean, if she had probably gone to Wonder Woman with her, you know, with this righteousness that she has, I imagine Wonder Woman would have been about that.
The thing is, again, the total control.
Right.
That's Waller's thing. But anyway, so I enjoyed Suicide Squad, but I'm still very fearful now for Wonder Woman, and I'm terrified for Justice League.
Well, we'll find out what happens sooner than later.
And you can find out what happens by just checking out our website, because we have all kinds of stuff that we're writing about. Games that we're playing, games that are getting ready to come out, gear that we're getting, that we're reviewing, peripherals, all kinds of stuff. So make sure that you visit our site, electricsisterhood.com. You can also get our podcast there, listen to it on the site, or listen to our podcast through iTunes, either on your desktop or on your mobile device through the podcast application by searching for the S-Cast and subscribing. Our podcast is also available on Stitcher Radio, on Google Play, Vogue Network, and pretty much any place that you can look for podcasts, you'll be able to find our podcast. Like I said, you can check out our editorial commentary on our website, as well as through Apple News. If you have an iOS device, just search for Electric Sisterhood, add it to your favorites, and we'll show up in your For You with all kinds of new news on game
releases. You said nudes. I meant news. It sounded like you said nudes.
I know, but I meant to say news.
I know.
It's Apple News. And that's where you can find our stuff, in Apple News. So if you're looking for gaming news and anime news in your Apple News, guess what? We can be all up in your Apple News, because we're in Apple News. So make sure that you add us to your favorites. Subscribe and tell your friends. And check out our content and share it and stuff. Like it on social, because we're on social. Be social with us. You can engage with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Elena Vesh. You can hit us up on Twitter at ESH News. And you can check us out also on Instagram at ESH News. What? It's crazy.
What? No way.
Yeah, we share photos of, like, games that we're playing and photos from events that we go to, like the upcoming B-Fig in September here in Boston. Boston
September 10th.
Make sure that you check out our website, because we'll be covering it live. So we'll be sharing photos in real time and doing interviews and all kinds of stuff. It's going to be super, super dope. So make sure that you get on that, because it's going to be dope. Make sure that you check out all the other great sites that are part of our network. That includes b3crew.com. with the No Borders, No Race podcast hosted by our homeboy KBD. Make sure that you check him out. He's also appearing on Wicked Anime. Great other show as well that you want to check out. News content coming out on Tuesdays. Then on Wednesdays, there's a live stream from our homeboy Hamsterman 2049 at Smash Rook. Definitely check out his live streams. Everything from retro games to current games. He streams it all, plays it live, and you can interact with chat and all kinds of stuff. It is super fun. I highly recommend it. Then there's also our homie for life, Phil the Issues Guy, at issuesprogram.com with his live recap shows, as well as just tape recap shows. You can call in, be part of the show. You can join him in chat. And he recaps everything, both current shows that are running as well as old shows. So make sure that you check out his YouTube channel, subscribe, and visit issuesprogram.com to check out all of Phil's recaps on Phil's recap and review. It's totally unbelievably fun. And rounding out the team, last but certainly not least, the homies over at nerdcrave.com. Trust us, if you crave it, if you're fiending for it, they're talking about it over at Nerdcrave. Anime, manga, comic books, movies, games, you name it. If it's nerdy, they're talking about it at Nerdcrave. So with that, it's time for us to pack up the mic of 1,000 truths, get some food,
yes,
get some rest,
yes,
and play some more games.
Yes.
I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
We'll see you guys next week.
Peace!
Hey, this is Sean Baptiste calling, and I'm just calling in. Heard you guys hit 500 episodes, and that is absolutely incredible. That's better than just about any other show I've ever seen. You're getting into legendary status, so you guys are still one of my favorite podcasts in the whole wide world, and I'm so proud of it for you guys and so happy. So enjoy 500. Dag!